I begin in Mark chapter 5. And they came to the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gerasenes. And when he came out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. And he had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one was able to bind him anymore, even with a chain. Because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Constantly, night and day, among the tombs and in the mountains, he was crying out and gashing himself with stones. And seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he says, "What do I have to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God, do not torment me." For he had been saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And he was asking him, "What is your name?" And he said to him, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he began to entreat him earnestly not to send him out of that country. For there had been a big herd of swine feeding on the mountainside. And they entreated him, saying, "Send us into the swine so that we may enter them." He gave them permission. And coming out of the unclean spirits, entered the swine. And the herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea, about 2,000 of them, and they were drowned into the sea. Those who tended them ran away and reported in the city and out in the country. And the people came to see what happened. And they came to Jesus and observed the man who had been demon-possessed, sitting down, clothed in his right mind, the very man who had the legion, and they became frightened. And those who had seen it described to them how it happened to the demon-possessed man and all about the swine. And they began to entreat him to depart from their region. And as he was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed was entreating him that he might accompany him. And he did not let him, but he said to him, "Go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you." Tell me the story of Jesus. We could go to a place just below Samaria, and there we'd travel down a deserted road and find the preacher Philip telling the story of Jesus to the Ethiopian. We could go to Caesarea and find Peter into the home of Cornelius, telling him the story of Jesus. We could travel to Philippi down by the river, and there we find the Apostle Paul talking to Lydia and a group of women, telling them the story of Jesus. And each and every one of us in this building who is a Christian has a story we could tell. It might have been a mom or dad or grandparent who patiently told us the story of Jesus. It might have been a friend who came to our house, sitting on the couch with Bibles open. We explained the story of Jesus, and we understood that. It might have been the passionate words of a preacher that touched our hearts as we looked in our Bibles, and we understood telling the story of Jesus. When we look in our Bibles, we understand that the early disciples saw the need to tell the story of Jesus. We call this evangelism. And this morning, we're going to spend some time talking about this subject. So good to have each of you with us today. We got guests among us. We're very glad you could be with us. We got some of our numbers who've been out for a while, and you're back, and we're glad you're healing and you're with us, and that's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. The story of Jesus, very important for us to understand that story, to believe that story, and to pass on that story. God did not intend for that story to stop with us, but to be told by others. And what we find through our Bibles is we find how the early church grew, and it grew rapidly. In Acts chapter 2, we read about 3,000 being baptized and coming to Jesus. Chapter 4, we read about 5,000. Then as we just kind of go through the book of Acts, it talks about you have filled Jerusalem, it says. Nearly the whole city came out. You've upset the entire world. We just see this explosiveness of the gospel as it's spreading. In Acts chapter 6, it says the disciples were increasing. Later on, it says the number of disciples continued to increase. In Acts chapter 9, it says they continued to increase as we talk about Judea and Galilee and Samaria. It says the word of the Lord continued to grow and to be multiplied. Chapter 13, it says the word of the Lord was being spread through the whole region. Chapter 16, the churches were being strengthened in faith and they were increasing in number daily. And then chapter 19, so the word of the Lord was growing mightily and prevailing. That little parable Jesus talked about, that smallest of seeds, that little tiny mustard seed, how when it was planted, it became the largest plant in the garden. We see that as we run through those pages of the book of Acts. The parable, that prophecy that Daniel said a long time before this, in Daniel chapter 2, how a rock would be cut without hands, and how it would destroy the statue made of bronze and gold and all these elements, and how the kingdom of God would crush all the nations. We see that as it's taking place in the book of Acts. When we open our Bibles and we talk about the early church, we notice that there's three focus they had. Number one, they had a focus upward, and that's to God. They worship God, their attention upon God, but that's not where it stopped. I want to understand this. There's a lot of people say, I want to worship, and that's all I want to do, I want to worship. Well, that wasn't what all the early disciples did. They also strengthened one another. We call that edification or encouragement. But that's not what all they did either. The third thing that they did is they had an evangelistic outward focus upon those which is lost. And again, that idea that the early church grew over and over and over again. Listen to this quotation here. A recent poll revealed that 43%, almost half of today's millennials, have stated they don't know, they don't care, and they don't believe that God exists. Does this surprise you? This quotation goes on to say, considering that we have turned the Lord's church into a glorified nightclub, starring preachers who deliver nothing but cotton candy, self-help, feel-good sermonettes, and are half-dressed worship leaders who want to be in the next American Idol. That's by Dr. Ronald Fraser. And think, that sounds like our guy. It is our guy, Ron Fraser. An astute observation. Our culture needs Jesus. Your family needs Jesus. If we don't tell, who will? And that's what we're going to look at today. So when we talk about evangelism, evangelism isn't always in faraway places. It's not always about the missionaries and sending someone far away to do a faraway work. It takes place right here in this building as we preach and teach Jesus Christ. It takes place in homes as wives try to teach their husbands about the gospel of Jesus Christ. It takes place as parents lead their children to understanding who Jesus is. It takes place at school and at work and across the street as folks like you spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. It takes place on social media. It takes place in the multiple places. It takes place as you invite those you love to come to Jesus. What's interesting about those Acts verses I ran through real quickly is that early church grew, but it didn't have a Facebook page. There was no YouTube videos. There was no live streaming. There was no text messaging, no website, no correspondence courses, no tracts, no bulletins. They simply told the message of Jesus. And I want you to understand, evangelism is the only way the church grows. And let's be more specific, evangelism is the only way this congregation can grow. We cannot pay someone else to do this. We cannot hire a marketing firm and they're going to bring people in. That's not the biblical manner. We cannot have someone else do this for us. If we stop it, it stops. The only way we grow is by telling the story of Jesus to one another. And so throughout the New Testament, there's a strong emphasis upon going. In the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 3, and verse 6, the apostle would say it this way, I planted, Apollos watered, but God was causing the growth. Understand, there's no growth if that seed doesn't get in the ground. Somebody has to plant, somebody has to water, then God takes over. It's just like seeing in any sports concept. The idea of a basketball team, the idea of a football team, not one person does it all. He needs the coaches, he needs the trainers, he needs the other players. No one can do it all. It is a team effort. As we think about the idea of evangelism. So notice the language of Jesus over and over. To go out. To go. To go. To go. To go. Not build a nice building, let them come. But we need to go. And so when we think about evangelism, evangelism is not about making this church larger. It's about telling people about Jesus. If all we're interested in is this congregation, then if you live in another state, we don't care about you because you can't come here. If you live across the ocean, we don't care about you. Evangelism is about connecting people to Jesus wherever they are, however we can do that. Evangelism is not about how many people are baptized. That's God's department. Our job is to tell that old story again and again. Tell me the story of Jesus. And we need to appreciate that evangelism still works. It still works because broken lives still need Jesus. And it still works because the gospel message remains the same, and that's the only message to be saved. Acts chapter 4, verse 12, which we'll read in just a moment, there is no other name under heaven by which men must be saved than Jesus Christ. So evangelism is inviting, it's sharing, it's showing, and it's teaching Jesus. Now, all of that's leading up to a couple things here. Then we're going to get to the sermon, okay? This is just the icing on the cake, okay? We've licked the icing. I hope it's been good. So in the entryway, on the tables, lots of our tables, you'll see a card like this, okay? And the idea is to invite your friends. March 31st is Easter Sunday. Won't you come and be with us? Won't you come hear about Jesus? Won't you come? Jason's going to be preaching that morning. He's going to be preaching a lesson from death to life. What a great thing about that. But then just behind that, also on the tables, is our flyer for a gospel meeting and cards for a gospel meeting. And the Saturday before this begins, we're going to have a singing. What a wonderful thing. How many people have never heard people just sing? Oh, where I go to church, we have a choir. Where I go to church, we have the band, and I watch. But come and hear singing as we read about in the Bible to God. And then wonderful, powerful topics about these things. We'll come back to this. I want you to be thinking about this as we go on. Three essential things about evangelism. Number one, we must believe it. If we don't believe it ourselves, nothing will happen. We must believe that Jesus Christ is the answer. Our hope does not come in November with the election. That's not our hope. Our hope is not to get the right guy in the White House. That's not our hope. Our hope is not in turning this economy around. Our hope is not that we're a strong nation. Our hope is that above all those things, our hope is in Jesus. If I do not believe that, I need to stop. Think seriously about where I'm going and what's important in life. As we said before in Acts chapter 4, there is salvation in no one else. And so when we think about the guy at work, I think about the co-worker. In my mind already, there's somebody I got in my mind. I got three people already in my mind. I go to the same post office about every day. The same lady works on me. We have a wonderful relationship. We tease, we talk. This week, she's going to get two cards. Yes, she is. I'm going to invite her. And there may be somebody in the doctor's office. There may be somebody over here, somebody over here, somebody over here, somebody in the family. One of the things you do not want to do is pre-qualify. You do that when you buy a house. You call a real estate agent up and says, hey, I was on Zillow. I'd like to see this house Sunday afternoon. It's listed for sale for $8.5 million. Will you let me see that house? And the first thing they're going to say is, let me run some numbers on you. And they're going to find out you can't afford McDonald's Happy Meal. No, I'm not going to waste my time nor their time. What's that called? It's pre-qualifying. And so when we pre-qualify in evangelism, we think, oh, that guy will never come. That guy never was. All he talks about is drinking. All he talks about is running around. All he talks about, and what we do is we pre-qualify. We don't want that kind of guy in our church. I mean, that guy's got tattoos from top to bottom. We don't want him. That guy's got every inch pierced. He's pierced more than Jesus was pierced. I don't want that guy. You are pre-qualifying. Let Jesus handle that. Your job is just to invite. Just to invite. Nathan's with us. Years ago, when Nathan was a high school student, I forget what math class he was taking, but he wasn't doing well. But we had a gospel meeting. He invited his math teacher to come. And he showed up. And he showed up again. And then he wanted to know if he and I could talk. Could we meet at school, after school, just he and I, and talk? The first thing he said is this against the law? I said, what do you mean? He said, separation of church and state. I said, don't worry about that. I got that handled. We studied and studied and studied, and he was baptized. A student asking his teacher. You see that? A teacher asking a student. So don't pre-qualify. The second aspect of evangelism is not only that, but we must live it. We must live it. And this is so essential as we think about this concept of doing what God wants us to do, to live the gospel. Get your Bible. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 5. Just a simple, simple passage. But again, let's look at this. Matthew chapter 5 and begin verse 13. Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. Says, you are the salt of the earth. Now, I want you to notice this. Notice the absoluteness of Jesus. He does not say, you need to become salt. He doesn't say that. You are salt. If you are a disciple of Jesus, you are salt. That's what verse 13 says. But if the salt has become tasteless, how will it be made salty again? It is good for nothing anymore except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are. You see that? You are the light of the world. A same concept that Jesus used of himself, that he is the light of the world. You are the light of the world, he says. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do men light a lamp and put it under a peck measure, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all those who are in a house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. I want you to understand, first of all, Jesus picked out two common elements in every home in Judea. They had salt and they had light. He did not say, you are caviar. That's expensive. Not everybody can have caviar. Not everybody likes caviar. You're light. Everybody needs light. And you're salt. And let's talk about those qualities real quickly here. Salt, as we think about it, salt is a preservative. And it prevents rot from happening, whether in food or in other elements. It is an anesthetic, preventing infection. It's a spice, enhances flavor. Salt stimulates thirst. You know, you've heard that expression, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can make that horse thirsty, can't you? That's what salt does. And then salt irritates. Salt is the essence of life. Sodium is involved in muscle contraction, including heartbeats. It's in our nerve impulses, in that digestion of protein. Salt regulates the exchange of water between cells. Without salt, the body goes into convulsions, paralysis, and then death. Put cells into a salt-free fluid and they will burst. Salt at times has been so sacred and so scarce that it was traded for gold. The Romans often paid in salt, and hence we get the expression, his worth in salt. Plato declared that the salt was made by the gods in above, and Homer dubbed it, the salt was divine. And then we think about light. Light is something that enhances, makes visible, and we use the expression to lighten. Light allows us to see Jesus. Light allows us to see where things are. In ancient times, the cities were built up on hills as a defense system. But as people would travel at night, they could see the lights of the city lit above all those things. And so Jesus is describing this to his disciples. What are you like? You're like salt. What are you like? You're like the light. And so when we think about this, it helps us to see this is what we are made to do. We're made to make the world better. Our world is rotten. Our world is falling apart. Our world doesn't know God. Our world spends its time wondering, why can't a boy be a girl and a girl be a boy? And then after a while, why can't we be trees? They've lost compass. They have no morality. And what the world needs is salt. It's not going to come down like manna from above. It comes from you and me because that's who we are. We are salt. And that's what we're made to do. And the world needs to see in us and through us the good that we can be. They need to see a marriage that is surviving, and not just surviving, but thriving and lasting. They need to see grace and forgiveness because the world doesn't know those words. They need to see someone who has the heart of a servant. They need to see Jesus in your home, in your marriage, and in your work. And when you think about how important that is, that's what Peter's really driving at. In 1 Peter 3, verse 15, sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that's in you. You have a hope. Why did we get up on a kind of a cold Sunday morning and drive down here? Because we believe, as we just sang a song, we'll see the face of God. We believe that this is not it. We believe that those who have the most money in the bank, the most cars in their garage, biggest house, biggest TV, that doesn't matter. What matters is Jesus Christ in your heart. And we live by that hope. And so when we're sitting in the emergency room of the hospital, things are tough, but there's a hope. When we walk home from that cemetery with tears in our eyes, we're not in despair because there is a hope. That hope is Jesus. And so that's what the world needs to see. That's what this emphasis is all about. And then salt and light work best in places where they're lacking. You might say, you know what? I'm the only Christian where I'm at. Great. How easy it is to turn on that light. You know, I'm the only one in my family that's a Christian. Awesome. Think how easy it is to spread that salt around. It works the best where it's lacking. Now, understand, as we think about this point here, people are turned off by four things. Number one, they're turned off by hypocrisy, pretending to be a Christian. Who you are in here is no different than who you are tomorrow. Tomorrow at work, tomorrow at school, tomorrow at the marketplace, you are the same person. So when it comes to this, as you think about this aspect, the song that you're singing to on YouTube, does it honor God? The t-shirt that you wear, does it honor God? The movie you see, does it honor God? The messages you like on Facebook, does it honor God? People are going to see through hypocrisy. Oh, you're a great Christian on Sunday, but Monday you're just like the rest of us. And that salt doesn't taste very salty. And that light has just burned out. And so we must believe it. Hopelessness, harshness, and haughtiness. All those things destroy our influence and our impact upon Jesus. And so the third aspect of evangelism, we must believe it, we must live it, and then we must share it. If we don't, who will? You know, when I was going through the songbook this week, thinking about this sermon, there's one song I don't know if I've ever heard sung here. It's not a hard song. I don't think song leaders like to lead it. I know me, as somebody in the audience, I hate singing it. It's a song of guilt. If you want to take out your song books, it's called 598. You never mentioned him to me. You never mentioned him to me. When in the better way or the better land before the bar we stand, how deeply grieved our souls may be, if any lost one should cry in deep despair, you never mentioned him to me. You never mentioned to me. You helped me not the light to see. You met me day by day and knew I was astray, yet you never mentioned him to me. I hate that song. I hate that song because every time I sing it, I think about all these people. I think about all those people I went to high school with, and I didn't mention them. I think about neighbors I live beside. We've moved on now. They've gone their way, I've gone my way. And I, for some reason, just never mentioned him. And when I think about this call, what if somebody had done that to me? What if somebody somewhere never mentioned Jesus to me? Where would I be today? And so the third aspect is we must learn to share it. Back where we began in Mark chapter 5, when the demon-possessed man, now cured of his demon, wanted to follow Jesus, Jesus tells him, go and tell your people. Go and tell your people what the Lord has done for you. Now, I want you to understand, this man did not sit down in a Bible class for 13 weeks and understand personal evangelism. Apostle Peter did not sit down with this man and say, now you need to understand the isms. What's wrong with Calvinism? What's wrong with communism? What's wrong with denominationalism? Ism, ism, ism. He didn't know any of that stuff. I dare say what happened to him was the only miracle he ever saw in the life of Jesus. Never heard the Sermon on the Mount. Probably didn't know who Isaiah was, let alone Ezekiel or Daniel. Didn't know much about the church, how the church operates. But one thing he knew, I was lost, and now I'm found. He didn't go away with Jesus with a pocket full of tracts. He didn't have a whole bunch of CDs of sermons. He didn't go to the internet and say, now, my friend, listen to this and listen to this. All Jesus said is, go tell your people what God has done to you. And can you do that? Jesus told the apostles, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. He who has believed and has been baptized shall be saved, and he who disbelieves shall be condemned. That means every continent, that means every nation, every city, every street, every house, and every person. Every single person matters to God. People that we don't like, God does. People we like to just kind of go away, God doesn't want them to go away. And that's the concept we need to see and we appreciate and understand. So we're back to where we started. Two wonderful opportunities for you. If you got your bulletin there on the very bottom, two lines. Two people. Just two people I would like to see become a Christian. Write their names down. Maybe somebody sitting in this building right now. Maybe somebody at home. Maybe somebody you're going to see tomorrow. Now, what then are you going to do? Can you give them a card and say, can you come? Well, Roger, what if they say, I'm not interested? You've invited. What if they say, I've got my own church? You've invited them. What if they say, I don't agree with you? Just say, I know somebody you can talk to. We'll send them to Jason. No, send them to me. Send them to me. Send them to me. I'll talk to them. I've been talking to people for a long time now about this stuff. That's the concept I want you to see. The very idea of sowing the seed, of go and tell your people. There's a story told of this little town. And this lady lived to be 103 years old, and she died. Oldest resident. Oldest resident, long time. So they had a little community paper. Editor said, we need to write something up about our oldest resident who died. Sister Hazel. She was 103 years old. So he gave it to the guy who writes obituaries. And he looked up stuff, and she didn't belong to any clubs. Never volunteered, never did anything at schools, looked at churches. She was a member of no church. Couldn't find nothing on her. So then he looked into the bad side, looked into the crime reports. She never arrested. She never had any tickets. There was simply nothing. And so he went back to the editor and said, I got nothing to write. This woman lived a long time, but there's nothing. And the editor said, well, we got to get somebody to write something. I mean, you can't live to be 103 years old and don't have some, you know, honor for that. So the editor kind of sat on it for a day or two, and he said, you know what? The next person that walks into my office, that's going to be his assignment. In walked the sports editor. Of course, the sports editor didn't know nothing about that stuff. He gave him the assignment. He did the same thing. He checked everything. There's nothing positive. There's nothing negative. So he said, Miss Hazel, 104 years old, our oldest resident, died. No hits, no walks, no errors. And I got to wonder, God has put me on this earth for a long time. God has put you on this earth for a long time. Is that what God's going to say of you? You didn't do anything bad. But you didn't do anything. You had no hits, no walks, no runs, no errors. And I believe as we understand the gospel message, when we get to heaven, there'll be somebody we'll see and say, hey, friend, because of you, I'm here. Something you said, something you sang, something you encouraged me, something you sent to me, had it not been for you, I would never have been here. And I dare say, if we get this lesson, about the time we're feeling kind of humble about that, someone's going to tap us on the shoulder and we're going to turn around and that person's going to say, hey, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. You know what I did yesterday afternoon? Got with my sister. We haven't been down to my parents' grave in some time. We did that. But there was a restoration preacher grave I wanted to see. And you want to talk about out in the sticks. This is out in the sticks. No GPS. It doesn't work. We're going down gravel roads. And the cemetery is supposed to be up some hill somewhere. And up and down, up and down. I can't find it. Finally, we saw a guy sitting in his truck. I said, hey, you know there's a cemetery around here? Yeah, you go past this house and up this hill. And we went up there. And I mean, there was just nobody around for anywhere. But there was that little grave. His name was Obadiah Winters. And in restoration history, nobody knows him. But in that little county, back in the mid-1800s, that man just preached his heart out. Some of my family, not connected to him, but would have been people in the pew that heard him. Some of my family probably became Christians because of that man. And what I want you to say and understand is, someday, when we're done with this life, there may be that person at work, that person at school, that neighbor, that family member, and they'll say, thank you. Thank you. All you did was, and you're going to say, all I did was hand you a card and invite you to come March 31st. That's okay. I started the process. I met some other people in your church, and they took over, and they taught me, and they taught me, and here I am. I'm in heaven because you cared enough. That's what evangelism is. And it's interesting, as you read the writings of the Apostle Paul to the Philippians, the Ephesians, Galatians, he never really preaches a lesson on this. It's just something that they knew. I have been taught to teach. I have been saved to save others. I have been led to lead others. That's the gospel message. And those early disciples got it. And I think through time and tradition, we have said, we will hire that done. We'll hire us a preacher, and he'll do it for me. Please, preacher, be the light for me. Please, preacher, be the salt for me. Please, preacher, do all the work for me. And all that preacher can do is do it for himself. You've got friends that don't even know who I am, but they're friends of yours. You've got people in your family I've never met, but you know them. And so God is saying to you, won't you do this? Won't you do this? Probably the most uncomfortable sermons we ever hear is this right here, evangelism. Because we have in our mind, I've got to go across the street to a guy I don't even like. He does everything I don't like. I go knock on his door and say, hey, Fred, you probably don't want to come to church with me, do you? He says, no. He says, well, go good. And that's how it goes. No. That's about inviting is getting a root canal, isn't it? Why are you here today? Because I love Jesus. Why are you here? Because Jesus gave me a second chance. Now, maybe I can't find those verses. That's okay. Maybe I don't know all the stuff I should know. That's okay. We got people here who know that stuff. Your job is that there's people out there that you have a connection to that no one else does. Will I tell them the story? Tell me the story of Jesus. Sweetest song I ever sang. This morning, that's our lesson. If in this building right now, there's one who understands, I need Jesus Christ. Maybe I don't know much. Maybe I'm like that demon-possessed man, and I don't get all this church stuff, and I don't understand Old Testament, New Testament, and this and that. But I know one thing, my life has been a mess. But because of Jesus, I'm seeing where I can be. I'm seeing that he's patient with me. I'm seeing that he's loving me. I'm seeing that he's going to forgive me. If you're ready to be baptized, this is the time. For the rest of us, let's go tell your people. Thank you. Let's stand.